Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
why have some monster volcanoes triggered global catastrophes while others have not? Kate Rivelos reports in the 2016 Cosmos magazine in an article titled Agents of Extinction. It's an interview style where she discusses questions with experts. Kate says, you've been studying mass extinctions for more than 30 years. What attracted you to this line of research? Paul Wignall replies, I find mass extinctions fascinating. They're the worst disasters of history of this planet and tell us how the world responds to severe crises. When I first became interested in mass extinctions in the early 1980s, the idea of dinosaurs were killed by a meteorite, now widely accepted, was new and one of the most exciting theories in science. Kate asks, in your recent book, The Worst Times, you suggest that mass extinctions are more likely when the continents are arranged in one big landmass, a supercontinent. How do you arrive at this theory? Paul Wignall replies, ever since I started working in the field, I've noticed the correlation between volcanism and extinction events comes and goes. I've wondered why. Around 7 years ago, I was working on a 260 million-year-old mass extinction event, and it's linked to an eruption in southwest China known as the Isemhan Traps. By dating the fossils found just underneath the lava, we were able to show that the time of the eruption matched the time of the extinction lists seen elsewhere around the world. Having convinced ourselves that the eruption triggered the mass extinction, it struck me that there was a string of at least six volcano-driven mass extinctions in the distant past, including the Great Dime, and that they all coincide with the existence of a single supercontinent known as Pangaea that began to break up around 175 million years ago. I began to wonder if the existence of the supercontinent made the impact of volcanoes worse than they might have otherwise been. Kate asks, can you walk us through the logic of why the relationship likely exists? Wignall replies, fragmented continents are better able to remove CO2 from the atmosphere than a single supercontinent. That's all to do with the rocks reacting to CO2 and trapping it chemically as bicarbonate ions, which are washed into streams and eventually into shallow seas. Sea creatures take up the bicarbonate into their shells, and when they die, carbon is buried for long-term limestone calcium carbonate. The conveyor belt that moves CO2 from the atmosphere into rock minerals as rainwater, which dissolves the gas and, being slightly acidic, breaks down the rock so that the carbon-trapping chemicals reactions takes place. The conveyor belt works well with small continents because nowhere is too far from the sea. So you have wetter climates and therefore more CO2 into the limestone. Small continents also have more shallow seas due to their trailing continental shelves. So they provide more habitat for limestone-building creatures. Stick all the continents together into a giant landmass and you end up with vast interior deserts and fewer shallow seas. It's easy to end up with runaway global warming in a supercontinent. Kate asks, so for all the factors that go into megavolcanism, such as corrosion of the ozone layer and acid rain, you're suggesting it's actually the rising CO2 levels that tip life over the mass extinction. Paul Wignall says, yes, I think it's a crucial factor. Global warming has many harmful consequences that the heat itself can be a real problem, especially if at low latitudes. The knock-on effects like oxygen loss in the ocean is also devastating to life. No doubt there are other factors involved too. The ozone destruction, even short intervals, can be harmful, particularly to terrestrial plant life. Kate asks, in hindsight, the relationship between supercontinents, volcanism and mass extinction seems obvious. Why hadn't anyone spotted it before? Paul Wignall says, up till now, most researchers fall into two camps. Either volcanism did it or something else, like a meteorite impact did it. In fact, I think the relationship between volcanoes and extinctions are more nuanced. Where there was always a problem with the volcanoes did it hypothesis because there are plenty of giant eruptions not linked to with extinctions. A supercontinent is a missing link in that chain. Kate asks, what theories had other scientists put forth about why some volcanoes triggered mass extinctions and others did not? Around a decade ago, Henrik Svensson of the University of Oslo came up with the idea that some volcanoes push magma through juicier, more carbon-rich areas of the Earth's crust than others. As magma goes up through the crust, it breaks the rocks around it. And if the rocks happen to be the coal or shale, released additional CO2. By contrast, when magma passes through ancient dry crust, it doesn't produce this extra pulse of greenhouse gases. It's a good and valid hypothesis, but there are several cases that fail to fit the theory, such as the 16 million year old North Atlantic eruption, which passed through coal deposits, but isn't associated with a significant mass extinction. And asks, what's the best evidence to support your idea? I think it's the 100% correspondence between volcanism and extinction during the time of Pangaea. That's 6 out of 6 hit rate. Since Pangaea broke apart, there have been another 6 major phases of eruption, but only one coincides with the mass extinction. And that's the end of the Cretaceous, when the giant meteorite hit. Kate asks, so how do you explain that extinction event, which occurred when the continents were split apart? The Cretaceous-Paleogene mass extinction, which wiped out the dinosaurs 66 million years ago, occurred at the time when the Earth's continents were wildly dispersed. The extinction coincides with the eruption of the Deccan Traps, flooding the west of the coast of India with a million cubic kilometres of lava. But it also coincides with the giant meteor impact of Xicapa in Mexico. Disentangling the role of the Deccan eruption and the meteorite impact is really tricky, but it's likely that the combination of the two events was made it so fatal for life on Earth. And if the meteorite impact didn't occur at the same time, I think the dinosaurs might have made it through. Kate asks, what have the critics said about the idea of the link between extinctions and supercontinents? Volcanic extremists believe that all large-scale volcanoes cause extinction and downplay the role of Pangaea because it only existed for 80 million years. It is true that all the largest volcanic eruptions caused climate change, but those that occurred at the time of Pangaea were much more intense, and only these that coincided with widespread extinctions. Some scientists also criticize the theory because we go deeper back in time. There are some mass extinctions that aren't clearly related to volcanism. For instance, the Ordovician-Silurian extinction between 443 million years ago. But the situation there was different because there was no plants on Earth. Oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. So the carbon cycle didn't work in the same way. Okay, that's right. So it's modern life actually is 50 million years ago. What is the key evidence you're lacking to support your hypothesis? This is a brilliant way of doing it. There's lots we don't know about the actual details of the mass extinction. Some are caused by oxygen starvation in the ocean and warming, but others are more enigmatic. We particularly need to know more about the environmental changes on land during the extinction events. Kate asks, what are the challenges to trying to understand it? Ideally, we'd like to have more examples of mass volcanism. But once we go back beyond a few hundred million years, the lava fields tend to have been lost to erosion, and so those events have to be inferred from other things. Dating techniques available for ancient eras are also much less precise, making it harder to line up the dates of volcanic activities with the dates of known extinction events. Kate asks, the most notable example of mass extinction during the period of Pangaea was the end of the Permian extinction, 252 million years ago, which wiped out most life on Earth and was the worst extinction in Earth's history. Why was that so singularly catastrophic? Paul answers, it's difficult to answer that. A trite answer would be say that it was just a lot more gas released from volcanoes during that crisis. But it may have triggered runaway global warming. It was also the only mass extinction to have seen a complete loss of terrestrial forests. Forests are a great way of removing CO2 from the atmosphere. Without them, the crisis would have got past the point of no return. Kate asks, how certain is that mass extinctions you've got in your sights were in fact triggered by volcanism? Other researchers have suggested asteroid impacts, cosmic ray blasts, and reversals of the Earth's magnetic field could all be culprits. Paul says, yes, much of the effort is being expended on looking for evidence of other extinction styles, but none yet have received much support. One of the aspects of mass extinction we understand better nowadays is that it occurred over several hundred thousand years. This makes it difficult to invoke a single strike cause, like the impact of cosmic rays, blasts, or supernova. Kate asks, why is it valuable to understand some of the historical volcanoes triggered mass extinctions while others are not? Paul replies, it gives us a much more insight to how the life on Earth evolved. The gigantic volcanic eruptions that occurred on Earth only had one massive supercontinent, Pangaea, caused a series of crises that fundamentally changed the course of life and removed vast numbers of animals and plants that would otherwise have thrived. By contrast, the design of those evolved during a climate buffering phase of Pangaea was splitting apart. Perhaps that explains how they took center stage for such a very long time. Massive volcanic eruptions of the past are also the only natural process to provide an analog to our current impact on the atmosphere. Kate asks, what can we learn from climate-induced extinctions of distant past about how modern-day warming will affect life? Paul says, we're pumping CO2 into the atmosphere at a far faster rate than any previous eruption. Species are going to have to ship polewood to cope with the warming, something that happened after the North Atlantic volcanism 60 million years ago. However, shifting polewood is more difficult today as wild plants and animals because the natural habitats are so fragmented by urban build-up and agriculture. In the oceans, the clear story from the past mass extinction is that global warming goes hand-in-hand with oxygen starvation. That's because global warming results in less oxygen dissolved in the water. The increased temperature favours rapid decay of plankton and other plant life, which uses up oxygen. Modern oceans are showing the first signs of these changes, and modelling predictions suggest that we may only be a few hundred years away from seeing large expanses of lifeless seas. A warm climate-induced mass extinction is probably inevitable, but our dispersed arrangement of constant continents will help us moderate the climate change. If we lived on a supercontinent world, it would most likely be much worse. We now have passed the peak of dispersed continents, that was around 100 million years ago, and we are heading towards the next supercontinent. Africa and India have both bumped into Asia and started to form the beginnings of the next supercontinent. In around 100 million years from now, we'll expect all the continents to have joined up with Asia too, and we will be in the next supercontinent cycle.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.